Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL podcast. I'm Con Rohr alongside Al Greer. I decided to try that out. My kids have been
took that for a test drive.
Al Greer.
Kind of like rolls off the tongue. It sounds like you're starting to say Albert, but then you know you're finishing with my last name, which is
Albert. Yeah,
an interesting dynamic. But this would be the time of year to take that sort of thing out for a test drive.
It's one of my favorite things to do. Like, me and my friends used to do that, where, you know, if somebody had, we would either switch the nickname to the formal or the formal to the nickname. And so, like, you know, and anyone named Richard, right, was Dick. Like, we called them all Dick, no matter what, right? And then, you know, I'm trying to think of, like, who's, like, a famous...
So... like Tom Curran, my buddy up here in Boston, you know Tom, right?
Yeah, sure.
Covered the Patriots forever. Tom is the king of the nickname you never asked for. So he'll like just start referring to people by unasked for nicknames. Like we did a little bit of that in college. Like my buddy Pierce, we started calling him Bob because his name was Rob, you know? So like, but Curran will do it with professional athletes, which is always fun. Like he... habitually referred to Emmanuel Sanders as Manny. So like there were, I wish I could remember a few more offhand. Tom, if you're listening, maybe you can tweet it at us or something like that. But, in fact, I tell you what, I'll text him now and ask him for some more,
oh, that's good.
On some more unprompted nicknames that he has awarded to people. Another one was he started calling Phil Perry the senator, the same way like John Gruden started calling Peyton Manning the sheriff, even though Peyton Manning never asked for that. So Phil Perry's now the senator.
Now I'm frozen in the moment, but like, you yeah. know, you know how like some people are like, you know, you call like Tim Tebow, you call him like Timothy, you know,
yep.
for no other reason than other than like, you know, you're just taking a stab at what his actual Christian name is. In Tim Tebow's case, a very Christian name. But I always liked doing that where it, just to throw the person off the scent a little bit. Like my wife's, you know, I like to do that with my wife's first name because like everyone calls her one thing. And then I'm just like, you just throw a curveball and she's like, who the hell are you talking to? It's really funny. You get that immediate reaction. We're going to recap the schedule release. We're going to talk Tua. We're going to talk rookie quarterbacks. But I am still... So the schedule came out on Wednesday. We are taping this on the morning of Monday, May 20th. I'm still hot about the schedule. And I didn't realize how hot I was about the schedule until I started talking to my neighbors who don't care about this at all. but they will just ask me things about what's going on with football. And the volume that my voice got to when we were discussing the nuances of the schedule surprised me, especially like 3 or 4 days later. And I know that you did some deep dives into that, and I want you to temper my anger here, but there are 3 or 4 things that supremely bothered me with this schedule. Okay. And it's hard.
Let's dive in.
Yes. It's hard for me to believe, and you know, you can twist it however way you want it, but it's hard for me to believe that this is even in the same continent as competitive balance. It's not. And my problems are as follows. The Jets' schedule is an absolute joke. 7 standalone games in 11 weeks. I don't care that a couple of them are against rookie quarterbacks. Maybe they requested not to have a bye after London, but the game you gave them after London was Monday MF in football against the Bills?
At Buffalo.
Are you serious? Buffalo, yeah. 7 standalone games in 11 weeks. That is insanity. And then to have the head of NFL broadcasting say the Jets owed us one because Aaron Rodgers got hurt. They didn't know anybody anything. Aaron Rodgers isn't going to make it to the end of the season because of this schedule. That's what's going to mess everything up.
Yeah. I thought the front end of their schedule was...
And then the back end is hard based on the teams that they're playing.
No, but I mean like the San Francisco thing. So you think about this, like people don't realize the way NFL travel works. So, you know, like they'll come out of San Francisco and probably, I mean, realistically, so you say that game probably ends 9 o'clock local time, right? The buses are probably pulling out of there at what? 10:30 Pacific time, right? Yep. Okay. So now you got what? A 6-hour flight to Jersey. You're probably taking off at like what, 5, 6 a.m. or 5, 6 a.m. Eastern? No. Yeah. No.
You're taking off
probably around midnight. Yeah, you're probably landing around 5 or 6 a.m. Pacific. Because you probably like take off around like 11 or 12 Pacific. So I'm messing the math up. But I mean, that to me is a huge beef. Because generally, what you would get when you play a Monday night game is you get the benefit of the runway on the front end and maybe you get to rest your legs a little, but this is the start of the season. So there's no real benefit to that. You're traveling cross country and then you come back and you're going to Tennessee the following Saturday.
And here's the thing. There was no reason. So the Jets also have the Cardinals on their schedule.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't you then, if you're going to give them back-to-back road games to start the season, why aren't the Jets playing the Cardinals in week 2? Because then they can stay on the West Coast. They can go down to wherever. They can go to Phoenix. They can stay somewhere down there. They can practice in Phoenix for the week. Then they can play the Cardinals. Then they can come home for the opener so that everybody's body clock is the same. Instead, you're going straight home. You have a short week. Then you're going to Nashville before your week 3 home opener. And against the Patriots, which is like, come on. It's just not fair. And I think if you want to know what the NFL thinks of you as an owner and you're Woody Johnson and your first game is facing the guy who sacked Aaron Rodgers and tore his Achilles on Monday Night Football the year before, that's a middle finger to you. That's what they think of you. All these primetime games aren't a compliment. They are a gauntlet for you to go through because the Jets sell better when they are unsuccessful and flailing in chaos. And this schedule is ensuring that that is going to happen.
Do you think ESPN asked for it?
Yes.
Because they want the storyline because that gives them the full day, right? And what's juicier, full day,
right,
than talking about what happened 1 year ago? The circular, it's great for business, but it's not great for you because you have to answer questions about it now.
All week now, Aaron Rodgers is going to have,
it would have been that way anyway. If the game was Sunday at 1, you would have been answering questions about his first game back. But
Monday night's different.
But the whole thing, like, because then you get past Sunday and Monday, boom, 10 a.m., like, all the focus is on that game. And it sucks, man. Like, and you know, so I actually did. And you mentioned, like, I did a little research on this. So I went back and I looked, you know, Howard Katz was the old scheduling czar. And the scheduling guys have an unenviable job and they do a great job with it, no question, right? I think this has more to do with the owners, personally. I think it has more to do with the owners and like creating, because if you create so much inventory, you have to fill so many boxes and everyone wants their piece of the pie. And we talked about this last week, right? Like when everybody's paying close to the same rate, it was different when it was tiered off.
Right.
Like when Monday Night Football cost substantially less than Sunday Night Football and Thursday Night Football was on the league's in-house network, well, then you could stash games and stash teams certain places because it was like, well, you paid a lot less than this group did. When everybody's paying a premium, which is what's happening now, you can't just put the worst, you can't put the Panthers into a Monday night slot or a Thursday night slot, right? You can't do it. And that takes options away. So what does that mean? Well, you know, you're not just taking the game off the schedule. That means the Chiefs got to go in again, or that means the Bills got to go in again, or the Bengals, or the Niners, or the Eagles. And so you're taxing these teams, and that's what's resulting is what's happened to the Jets. That's the extreme of it, but it's happened to other teams too. So I look back at my story, right? And from 2019, it was the first year I did it. I'd sort of taken the mantle along with a lot of other things from Peter. And so it was the first time I'd really dove in and did the making the schedule story. I went and sat in the scheduling room with the guys. They were great talking about it. And so what they were most proud of, right? What they were most proud of was there was only one instance of a team going on a three-game road trip. And there was only one instance of a team playing on the road on a Sunday after a road Monday nighter, right? They were really proud of that. They were like, we're taking care of our teams. And they felt like that was an accomplishment. And for people who don't know, again, the three-game road trip doesn't sound bad.
It's terrible.
Until you realize this isn't the NBA or baseball or baseball or hockey where you're just flying from one city to the other. You're going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. So this year, so like I said, that only happened once in each case, right? So this year, there are four teams that have three-game road trips. And there are five teams that are playing on Sundays on the road after road Monday night games. On top of that, there was the whole Thursday night thing, which was you don't have to play more than one Thursday night game, right? I mean, it's taxing on the body, everything else. The result of it can be cumulative. Well, now you have 14 teams that are playing on either 4 or 5 days rest. So that's less than a Monday night rest, right? Monday night rest is 6 days rest. You're playing, there are 13 teams that are playing on like the Thursday night rest. And it's not always a Thursday night game, but the Thursday night rest. And then there's a 14th team, which is the Chiefs, that's playing on a Friday after a Sunday and also has a Thursday nighter. So it's just, you know, I think it's a couple things, Connor. It's number one, it's that you have all of the different masters that you're serving now that have paid a premium rate and are expecting a premium product. So that's number one. Number two, you know, I just think, like, this is my own personal opinion. They know if you put football on TV, it's going to rate.
Sure.
And so if someone gets hurt, and this sounds crass, if someone gets hurt or the quality of the game is maybe 85% of what a normal NFL game is, how much do they really care? And I think the answer is, as long as it rates, they really don't, you know? I mean, I think you have more owners that aren't in the trenches like football fans. I think you have more owners than you ever have that really don't know if it's puffed or stuffed and don't care as much about the product. Now, that's not everybody. There are owners that deeply care about their teams, that are entrenched, that love it, that live for having that team. There are a lot of guys like that, you know? For all the criticism of Jerry Jones and Robert Kraft, those two guys care deeply about their teams, you know? The Maras, the Rooneys, they care deeply about their teams. But there are people that don't, you know, like that aren't in the trenches to that degree. And so I do think that that's part of it, is like the quality of the product matters less than the rating they can affix to it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And so my one closing point here on the Jets, I just feel like defeatist, because primetime games to me should be earned through performance. You should have to play your way into primetime games. And now, okay, I get it. You're not going to not put Aaron Rodgers in primetime. But Aaron Rodgers is now 40. He's coming off of his last season in the NFL was not good. Okay. And so the Jets this year have the most standalone games and are tied for the most primetime games in 2024 with the Cowboys, who have won 12 games in each of the last three seasons, the 49ers, who were in the Super Bowl last year, teams that have less primetime games than the Jets, the Ravens, who won 13 games last year, the Eagles, who were in a Super Bowl 2 years ago, the Packers, the Chiefs, who won two Super Bowls in a row. Like, all of these teams should have more primetime games than the Jets, and you should allow the Jets to work their way into a situation like that. You are pre-baking this team to a point where they are never going to reach their potential.
Do you think it's like, do you think it's the NFL betting people are just going to turn and look at a 10-car pileup?
Yes, that's what they want, but that's like, I'm trying to shake everybody.
I'm not going
to
lie.
Yeah. I would be.
Yeah.
I'm sure they are. But, like, I don't know how to shake anybody else.
Well, I know
else.
They are. They
yeah,
are.
Yeah, they are. but how do you, how can I shake the normal person? And because here's what really sucks about being the Jets. It's going to be, and, you know, I hope they do well, right? And that defense could be good enough to just pound the crap out of a bunch of the rookie quarterbacks earlier in their schedule and survive all the primetime games. And then they could be humming by the time they get to the divisional schedule. I don't know. I'm not putting that against them. I think that they're well coached. I think it's a good roster, all that stuff. But here's what's probably going to happen. It's going to be week 10 and the team is going to be like 4-6. And there's going to be something that's going to happen as a result of everyone being tired and frustrated from all these road trips. And then all the fan at home with their remote control flipping through the channels is going to say, ah, typical Jets. This is always what happens. But really what we're doing is putting this team in a pressure cooker for 11 straight weeks. And we're being like, haha, don't screw up. Don't screw up. Don't screw up. And then as soon as they do, we're going to jump on them. Without the perspective that the NFL has basically put them through. What's the thing at the end of American Gladiator? The end thing that you have to go through.
Now you're asking me to like dive way back
like
into the memory.
Nickelodeon Guts. Remember the aggro crag at the end? They had to go through the aggro crag. We're putting the Jets through the aggro crag. The aggro crag was like the culmination of everything. It was like you had to put together all the skills that you had competed against. So there was like the, you have to climb and then you have to like rappel and then you have to like run and you know, we're putting the, you know what the Jets are? The Jets are like the lay person in American Gladiators. And then the NFL are like those two beefy guys in leotards firing tennis balls. Remember the tennis ball cannon in American Gladiators? That was my favorite. All right. The second thing that bothers me about the schedule, and I can be entertained at the idea that this could end up being a benefit somehow, but how the Steelers have all their divisional games between week 13 and week 18, and they play like 6 of 7, I think, against divisional opponents, or 6 of 8 in the hardest division in football. And so, like, why? That doesn't make any sense. And you know, the reason it's like that is because they had to sandwich all these other puzzle pieces together. And then they're sitting there in the room and they're being like, well, the Steelers play the entire AFC North slate in the winter, starting Thanksgiving. Sorry. You know, and then they end. And then after they're done with that, the reward is the Chiefs on Christmas on short rest. If I'm Mike Tomlin, I'm kicking down the door of that place and wringing necks. Like, this is insane. Now, here's where you could argue. Here's where you could argue.
Oh, and my God. I'm like looking at their schedule.
It's insane. Mike, I saw one good point, okay? I think it was Mike Florio, PFT, who's great and who I love. And he said, okay, maybe it's an advantage if you're the Steelers because you're playing in the AFC North. Joe Burrow has only made it through one complete season.
Right.
Lamar Jackson gets hurt. No offense. And Deshaun Watson is Deshaun Watson. So maybe you want all of your divisional games backed up towards the end of the season because you have a better chance of not. But maybe you have Deshaun Watson at peak strength at the end of your schedule.
I mean, it just seems like such a cruel twist that you throw the
Chiefs Christmas game in there.
The Chiefs and the Eagles in there too. Yeah.
Like, come on. Like, you can't, again, you can't.
Well, the Chiefs are another one. The Chiefs are another one where they're last here. Hang on. I have it. Where did I put it here? The Chiefs have it where is it? They're okay. So they're week 12 to 17. Sunday, Friday, Sunday, Sunday, Saturday, Wednesday.
It's a joke.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I just, you know, it's they're one. So here's where the issue is going to be. Like, people are like, I've heard a lot of people say two bye weeks, right? So just so people know, the reason that they won't go back to two bye weeks, the reason why it's never become a serious conversation is because of the networks. The networks don't want the extra bye week because they feel like it'll dilute the Sunday product.
You know, what's diluting the Sunday product?
Is what they're doing here. The networks right? are doing so, like, now. By not diluting the Sunday product with the second bye and making it safer, they're diluting the Sunday product by making the game more dangerous, you know? So it's just, it's, again, like, you know, and I just think it's, everybody has somebody they answer to. Everybody has bosses. For the owners, the network heads are the bosses. And I just think as the price of these packages has escalated, you know, if you're ESPN or you're Amazon, you paid what you did to get those packages. Hell yeah, you should be asking for great, you know, like, cause that, and you remember how long, like how these things got dragged out, right? Cause the NFL was searching for top dollar. You don't think it came up at some point when the NFL was asking for more and more and more, like ESPN saying, well, you got to give us a Super Bowl then.
Right.
Like ESPN, Amazon saying, well, you got to give us a better package then. You got to give us better games.
Yeah.
And because they were chasing that, the dollar, right? Like they kept chasing the dollar. Well, you got to let us flex, right? So, I mean, I just think in this case, it's a matter of, and I don't even know if I used this in the pod. I used it a couple places last week, but it's like, let's just say like, so the Sunday night package costs $25. The Sunday package costs 20. Monday night football costs 15 and Thursday night costs 10. Right. So then if you went to like Amazon or ESPN and said, well, you know, of course your package doesn't look as good, you know, like, because look, like NBC paid $25 and you guys paid 15 and 10. Right. But which is sort of the way it was before. But if all of a sudden then ESPN and Amazon are paying $23 a piece, what are they going to say?
Right.
You know, so that's sort of the way you have to look at it. Like, I think that's where this has happened, is that they want to get different carriers in and they want to get different people involved and they want to have the price escalate. And as the price escalates, to get the price where they want it, they got to promise more things. And the collateral damage here, I think, becomes the players and the quality of the football.
By the way, speaking of terrible stretches, because I did the five teams who got screwed the hardest by the schedule. The Steelers were one of them. Obviously, the Jets were number one. Look at this Cardinals schedule, by the way. Week one, on the road at Buffalo, 10 a.m. body clock. Week two, home, Rams. Week three, Lions. So week four, you have the Commanders. You think that's a winnable game, probably. Week five, at 49ers. Week six, at Green Bay Packers. Week seven, Los Angeles Chargers. Week eight, at Miami Dolphins. When is that team winning a game? Like,
yeah.
I mean, now they played hard last year. This team's better than people
think. They're better than people think. And yes. I think that they're better than people think.
But still, if you're Jonathan Gannon, did you look at that and you're like, cool, cool. Like,
I mean, I guess like your hope if you're a Cardinals fan now is you spring an upset somewhere in the first three and then you beat the Commanders to get out of September at 500, right?
Like the back end of it, okay. I got Michigan or Minnesota, the quarterbacks from Michigan. You got JJ McCarthy on the back end. You got your two Seattle games, which might not be as daunting. You got the Patriots. You have that beautiful Panthers game, which I'm sure everyone's going to be looking forward to so much at the end of the season. But then you close out the season again with the 49ers. My last rant is that, and this was another thing that Mike Florio brought up that he noticed in the schedule, which I thought was really interesting. The Lions could end up playing 14 of their first 15 games indoors. They may not play outdoors until well into December.
Wait, who is this?
The Lions.
Really?
Isn't that crazy?
Well, that division. Well, yeah, that division. Because I mean, but that's crazy. Yeah.
I mean, think about that.
That typing everybody hears is me Googling things furiously as Connor brings them up because I don't have the schedules memorized. But yep, yeah. So a Rams home.
And some of them are multi-purpose stadiums, right? So
they could open the roof in Arizona. They could open the roof in Dallas. Holy crap! You're right.
But look at that.
So the Packers is at Green Bay, November 3rd, right?
So that's the one, I believe. Because Houston,
Houston's, yep.
Indianapolis.
Wow.
How wild is that? Week 16 at Chicago. Right when before be Christmas like could be their second outdoor game. Which, you know, maybe it's not an advantage. I don't know. But by then, if you're
isn't that crazy that 13
and one, who cares?
A team from Detroit might be like...
might never play outside.
At a massive disadvantage going and playing cold temperatures in December. I mean, that might be the only... like. But if you look at it, like that's the only cold weather game because San Francisco weather will be fine there in December.
Right.
So they have one cold weather game the whole year.
And so,
I mean, Green Bay could be dicey in November. Who knows? But probably not.
You're going to have all these anomalies, and I could keep going. Like for okay,
I mean, this is like a little bit more like a scheduling quirk, right? Because this is the formula. Okay. Spit this one out. Yeah.
All right. Here's a non quirk one. Okay. Out of since 2005, ESPN has compiled net rest differential. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Or no, since 2002, they've been doing net rest differentials. So how many more weeks of rest does one team have going into another team? And then they rank it cumulatively throughout the season. The 2024 Ravens have 4 more weeks of positive rest differential, 4 more weeks than any team since they started tracking that metric. So, okay, the Ravens have a plus 16 rest differential, plus 16.
Mm-hmm.
The previous high was a plus 12 over a 22-year sample size.
Okay, so part of that would be that they get to one of their longer trips is to Kansas City. That's on that Thursday night. So that helps.
That's wild.
Yeah. Good for them.
I mean, great for them, but like a lot of this shouldn't be happening. You know what I mean? Like a lot of this should not be happening, right?
Yeah. Well, so this, those imbalances where, again, like this is, I mean, like it really is that simple. It's like the more games you put on weekdays, the harder it becomes to put the jigsaw puzzle together. And I just, again, like it would take the players banding together to stop this from continuing, right? Because who else is going to stand in the way of it? Or like people not watching anymore, which isn't going to happen. I think we've pretty well established that.
I did. It didn't pick up steam, but I advocated for in my Teams Who Got Screwed column, the Jets to just not come out of the locker room week one. Just don't come out.
Boycott.
Boycott. And here's the thing, and I'll wrap it up with the Jets, and then we'll get on to other stuff because I've been complaining about the schedule.
Or they could let their charter leave and just hang out on the, just stay on the tarmac.
Stay at Teterboro or Morristown, wherever the Jets take off from. They have a cool little airport in New Jersey that's not Newark. But
do they not? They don't fly out of Newark.
Mm-mm. I don't think. Oh. Maybe they do, but there's two little ones. Like I know Woody Johnson's private jet goes into.
Oh, I know they have like the private airports around there, but I didn't think. I mean, because it's New York, maybe there is a private airport that's got like a big enough runway to.
Yeah, maybe the runway's not big enough. I don't know.
I mean, because I think that's why most NFL teams, like I know, like so the NBA team, like so the Celtics here, they fly into Air Force Base near where I grew up called Hanscom, right? But they can do that because it's a smaller plane. I don't think the Patriots could do that because they need a bigger plane because it's more people, obviously.
Do they need more than one plane, too?
Huh?
Do they need more than one plane, too? Or they fit all that on one plane?
Like an NFL team?
NFL team? Yeah.
So I know normally it's one plane. There are instances like where they will have like a friends and family plane or a corporate plane. You know, I know that exists where like the team will do, you know, the team might make like, say like you're playing out in Arizona and you turn it into like a golf trip for your sponsors or whatever. They may send charter another plane to go, you know, like sometimes they'll do that. But I think generally like all the people that are involved in like the week to week that are there, like on the trip every week or on one plane. I'm pretty sure people are learning a lot about NFL travel logistics on this podcast.
They are. It's kind of interesting. One more weird scheduling quirk. The Lions not only play 14 of their first 15 games potentially indoors. Guess how many short weeks they have? Short road weeks.
How many?
Zero. They're one of four teams that do not have a short road week.
That's crazy.
And guess how many short weeks period they have? The whole season. Short rest. Once.
One. And that is?
I don't know when it is. I just know that, but that is unbelievable. Let's get into some other stuff because I can't tell you like how hot I got with this schedule. Like my wife is like, why do you care? And I was like, I don't know, but I think like, part of the problem is like we cover the NFL and we write about it all year. And then you're writing something about a team in December and some like about some really interesting thing that's going on. And then on X or Twitter or whatever, someone's just going to be like, well, they suck. Who cares? But the reason they suck is not because the reason they suck is because of the schedule. A lot of it has to do with the schedule. You know, that's why they suck. So
we're giving lots of coaches and quarterbacks crutches on this podcast, too.
That's it. Take it, baby.
Yep.
That's all we need. Albert has some really interesting stuff up this week, and I encourage you guys to go look at it, and I want to talk about some of it here. Let's start with Tua. They're in an interesting spot now where, listen, I think old boss Peter King used to have a great line in meetings where he would say, if you gave Mike McDaniel sodium pentothal.
Peter's a big sodium pentothal guy.
He doesn't say truth serum, he says sodium pentothal,
which is truth serum, right?
Yeah,
I would think
if you gave Mike McDaniel truth serum and you sat him down and you said, would you have paid that for Kirk Cousins this offseason and would you have felt better about it, I think Mike McDaniel would say, hell yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And instead, what's happening is that you're running into a situation where you almost have to give Tua the Daniel Jones contract.
Right.
Which is not what you want to do. I'm sorry. It's not.
I think my guess would be, so Tua is expected to be there on Monday. The news might already be out there. I'm not sure. But
it is.
It is. Okay, so he showed up today. And, like, my understanding is, like, he's been doing some stuff off-site, so he's been working with John Beck that's, you know, hiring a quarterback's coach, a personal quarterback's coach for the first time in his life. So that's new. So there are these different things that he's doing, and the team, for their part, has started to operate like a team that's getting ready to pay its quarterback. They got rid of Xavien Howard and Jerome Baker, and they let Christian Wilkins walk. And so it definitely feels like a team that's operating like one that is preparing to onboard a $50 million contract. I've always felt like with these, like, do you wind up being, after you pay a guy who is maybe a B rather than an A at that position, like the 45-win NBA team who paid its superstar too much? And it's just always going to be competitive and knocking at the door, but can never quite break through. And I think that's the question confronting the Dolphins now. And I think that's why, if you're them, do you do a deal that's got like healthy numbers, but that you can bail from in a couple of years? You know, like is that
like
the play?
One?
Yeah. I mean, I like, do you pay a premium? So like, let's say you do a deal that's got like $90 million in the first 2 years, but it gives you the option to bail after 2025, right? So that way, like, you know he's a good quarterback this year, and then theoretically you could draft one next year, right? You could get aggressive and draft one next year. And, you know, you could move, like, you could wind up moving him after the 2025 season or just cutting him. I think that there's some merit in that idea. I don't know if you want Tua to be your quarterback for the next 10 to 15 years, but clearly they've done a lot to invest in him over the last, you know, over the 2 years Mike McDaniel's been there. And like you look at the, again, you look at like their actions over the course of this offseason, they've really done a lot to accommodate the contract that everybody thinks is coming.
Boy,
what would you do? I mean, what would you do here?
I mean, I would have leapfrogged the Falcons for Kirk Cousins. Unless if Kirk was always going to go to the Falcons, I know his wife is from down there, you know, but like clearly the Falcons were interested.
The interesting thing is Mike was in Washington with Kirk the same way that Raheem was.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So they were both there for that.
They had the
background. And I do think like to some degree, Kirk would probably be able to open things up in a way that maybe Tua hasn't been able to, and give you and like the thing is, if you pay Tua, are you drafting one next year? Like realistically,
like you have to. But the problem is, like, I hate how much Mike McDaniel second guessing there's been. I mean, that guy has been great in Miami, really, like really and truly great, and. We look at what Tua was under Brian Flores and like five different of his different offensive coordinators to what he's been under Mike McDaniel, which is at times an MVP candidate just based on numbers, if you took everything else out of it. But time and time again, when the entirety of the game is on his shoulders, when maybe Tyreek Hill is off the field, which you almost have to at this point assume that like it's going to be hard for him at that age, asking him to do what you're doing, to assume that he's going to be close to full strength in December or January. And so, you know, that's when Tua needs to take over. And he doesn't. And that's okay. Like, you know, very few quarterbacks do. But Mike McDaniel is getting the most out of people. And I would love to see him. It would be very sad for me to see a situation where everything gets cleaned out in Miami and we never get to see Mike McDaniel with like a dude under center or even a rookie of his own choosing who has all of those attributes that he values, you know?
Right. Right. And I think like the other thing is like, obviously we're all a product of our own experiences and Mike was there for, you know, when they moved up and went and got Trey Lance and they moved off of Jimmy Garoppolo. And so he got to see all of that. And like, so I think he also knows like that the draft isn't always the answer, you know, and that what's behind door number two can be pretty scary because you don't have like the same floor that you would have with Tua. With Tua, at least, you know, if he stays healthy, you're going to get a pretty competent level of NFL quarterbacking. And it can be scary for these guys sometimes, especially the ones who've been through it, like Mike went through it. He saw the Robert Griffin thing fall apart. You know what I mean? Like, so does that affect you in some way? He was there for Johnny Manziel in Cleveland. Yeah. You know, so does that affect the way you look at it and being like, yeah, that sounds great. Like, we go back in the draft and we get one and we're all in and we got our quarterback on a rookie deal. But for a guy who was there for RG3, for Manziel, and for Trey Lance, Is the outlook a little different? Like, hey, you know, it's not that easy to get the 10th or 12th best quarterback in the league. You know what I mean? So I know what you're saying, right? Like, which is, it would be great to see him with like this top shelf guy, but there is a flip side to it. And the flip side to it is like, man, like if we take the wrong swing and we've screwed up what we already have, then I'm in big trouble.
And
the Niners, I mean, the Niners obviously got tremendously fortunate to wind up with they wound up with at the very end of the 2022 draft, which of course was after McDaniel was gone.
Yeah. Oh, I hope that Stephen Ross is smart enough to realize that he lucked into a really good head coach. I mean, the Dolphins were across the board number one on the NFL player survey. and the NFLPA player survey, and I think a lot of that has to do with Mike. I really do.
Yeah.
Now, obviously,
they have a beautiful facility too.
They have a nice facility and great people working there. But those people, I mean, Mitch Golderson
and a lot of guys like living in South Florida. I don't think that hurts.
That doesn't hurt. Yeah. Yeah. Mitch Goldich and I did a story on it. A lot of those people are great at what they do, but are also super empowered by Mike, you know? And I think that has, you know, I don't know. I think that has a lot to do with it.
It's crazy, too, to think about that because, I don't think anybody would have said, like, in 2011 when Steve Ross was getting on the private jet to fly out to Stanford to go meet with Jim Harbaugh. And without telling, God rest his soul, Tony Sperano, I don't think very many people would have guessed that that Steve Ross would be one of the better owners in the NFL. But like the evidence is now that he's set up a good operation there.
For sure. Speaking of good operations, we have teams now that are breaking in rookie quarterbacks. There's a lot to this process. You in your takeaways for Monday have brought us inside that process with a few teams. Tell us what you know.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because like they're taking very different approaches, and like the Bears obviously being in pole position, having the number one overall pick, and being able to control everything allowed them to be very aggressive in assessing Caleb Williams, and they took advantage of that by making the decision early because they were able to consider all their options and know they would be able to pick whichever one they wanted. And then they actually started working with him on the offense in their Zoom meetings with him. So for those who don't know, teams are allowed to do three one-hour Zooms with each draft prospect. And so they maxed those out with Caleb, and they basically went through an install over the three Zooms before the draft. So they put in the terminology with them in the first Zoom. They put in their normal down plays on the second Zoom. And then on the third Zoom, they put in third down and red zone. So when he was drafted, he already had like a baseline of knowledge in what he was doing. And that was a result of conversations they've had about like, let's just start him, and like, let's go forward with this. And not screw around and not throw open the door for a competition. And with the idea being, it really helps to get the amount of reps he'll get, and also for the veteran players to see him that way. And you can see how they've emphasized that in the dinner they did with him before the draft and everything else. So that's one way to do it. The other two teams there in the top three, the Commanders and Patriots, are having competitions. With the Commanders, it's very focused on, Jaden Daniels and Marcus Mariota, and they're doing like the two platoon practice system where they have simultaneously practices on two fields so they can work those guys with both the ones and the twos and get the most out of their time. And then the Patriots are basically saying like, we're going to throw all four guys into the competition and let the best man win. And hopefully we have a better idea at the end of the spring. I think with the idea that at least probably at the start of the season, Jacoby Brissett's going to have the leg up as a guy who knows the system already, who knows the market, and who's been, you look at the awkward situations Jacoby Brissett's been in, right? Like, he got his first NFL start as a result of Tom Brady's Deflategate suspension, right?
Right.
Then he became the Colts starter after Andrew Luck's like out of nowhere retirement. And then he was the stand-in for Deshaun Watson during Deshaun Watson's suspension. Like, you talk about a guy who's like seen everything and can handle any situation, no matter how awkward it gets. Like, he's your guy. You know what I mean? Like, and so like, I think that the likelihood is they start Jacoby at the beginning of the season. So my guess would be, we know Caleb's a starter in Chicago. My guess would be it's being set up for Jaden to win the job in Washington. And then in New England, you're going the other way where you're probably going to at least start the season with Drake May on the bench.
So given all that, Albert, who do you think, who's your, not rookie of the year, but rookie quarterback of the year?
Well, the guy in the best situation is J.J. McCarthy. I think that's pretty well established. I'm not positive he's going to start, though. I think Kevin O'Connell's going to be very disciplined about that. And I also have gotten the sense that O'Connell and Wes Phillips, their offensive coordinator, and Josh McCown, all those guys are very comfortable with Sam Darnold. So I think J.J. McCarthy will start at some point. I'm just not sure it's going to be early enough for him to have the best season of any of these guys. So I really want to go with Jaden Daniels just because I think scheme-wise they'll be able to cook some things up that'll catch people off guard, and they're going to be really hard to defend, but it's hard not to pick Caleb Williams. So I think I go with Caleb because I think Caleb is got a pretty good situation around him with Darnell Wright as a high draft pick and an anchor for that offensive line, and he's throwing to DJ Moore and Rome Odunze and Keenan Allen, and they've been, and Cole Kmet's there at tight end, and they've got, you know, a stable of backs. They signed DeAndre Swift. Like, I think that they've created a really nice situation for Caleb Williams where I think he'll have the best year. I wouldn't be surprised if Jaden Daniels winds up, you know, with 33,000 yards through the air and 1,000 yards on the ground, though.
Ooh.
Like, I think we could see something crazy from Jaden Daniels because scheme-wise, they'll be able to stay ahead of everybody else. As far as the other two, Penix is going to sit, and or the other guys, Penix is going to sit. I think May sits at least to start the year. You know, McCarthy, I think, sits to start the year, but maybe comes in somewhere middle of the season. And Bo Nix is the wild card. What do you think the Broncos do with him?
I mean,
I think you almost have to play him, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's 24. I mean,
he's got 60 college starts. Like, on paper, he's like, should be prepared.
I say that with all due respect. I mean, you know, I talked to, you know, we did, Bo was part of the covered package we did, and I had a great conversation with his dad, and his dad's like, Bo's married. He's got a house, you know? Like, I mean, he's, mm-hmm. you know, he's ready to go, you know? It's and not that marriage and home ownership automatically make you mature. I'm probably the best proof of that. However, it does certainly change your focus and your, you know, it brings you into a kind of a narrower place in terms of, hey, these are the things I got to get done to take care of my family.
He played in college against Joe Burrow.
His first start was against Justin Herbert. Justin yeah. Herbert. And Justin Herbert's been in the NFL for a while.
I believe Michael Penix played against Dwayne Haskins. I'm not in college, which I think that's
well,
right.
Because he started as a true freshman at Indiana.
Yeah, so I don't know.
At some point during his true freshman.
He did. I just, hold on a second. I'm not sure if he, because I think he got hurt that year. So I'm not sure if he made it to that game. But he would have been, he would have, here. This is great podcasting here.
This is like when Mike Francesa used to just go on Baseball Reference in the middle of the WFAN show, and he's like, Aaron Judge is betting in the month of October.
Sorry. No panics that week. That was Peyton Ramsey started that game for the Hoosiers that day.
Who could forget?
Yeah. He's a pretty good college player, that Peyton Ramsey, from what I can remember. Penix was on the roster, though. So, do we want to wrap it up with some unasked for nicknames, by the way?
Oh, yeah. Give me some more.
The Tom Curran
yes.
unasked for nicknames. Celtics legend Bob Parrish.
Oh, that's so good.
Celtics legend Bob Parrish. I thought that was a good one.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently got to, he started calling Kristaps Porzingis, who's new on the Celtics this year, Stopsy. It's pretty good. I like that one too. And then his boss at NBC Sports Boston, great guy, Kevin Miller, is the I don't know what his title is exactly, executive producer or whatever. Kevin Miller, who's from the great state of Illinois, from a town called Greenville, he calls Kevin Miller the Greenville Flash.
We used to do a thing,
and I'm texting with him and Phil right now, and I'm trying. He brought up the senator too as an unasked for nickname, and I swore to him, I'm like, you have so many more of these in the holster, and I just can't remember them.
It's hard. I'm like going down the list.
But Bob Parrish is a pretty good one. That's an all timer.
Yeah.
There's got to be some Williams that we referred to that you could refer to as Bill. That you would definitely not be a Bill. You know what I mean?
I mean, one of the closest to home examples was always Bob Glauber, who is a legendary Hall of Fame NFL columnist at Newsday for a very long time. I call him Bobby Football. And
I like that.
He used
Bobby
to
football.
He used to, you know, our former beloved coworker Jenny Vrentis, who's now at the Times. Bob Glaber used to always walk into the building and look at her and say, "Jennifer," and he used to walk by and to the point where I had assumed her real name was Jennifer, but I never thought about it, you know. And then, you know, it's just funny to, it's funny to do that, you know.
I'm a big fan of it. I'm a big fan of it. Just the unasked for nicknames are always excellent. I'm trying to find a William here that would be good. Like, I thought of the old 49ers fullback, William Floyd, right? Who was a star back in the day. Kind of sounds like a guy. It sounds like a guy from accounting. You know what I mean? There's no Williams in the NFL. Oh, no, there are. William Golston. So there you go. Bill Golston. There's only three Williams in the NFL right now, according to this.
The actor Richard Gere?
Yeah.
So there's a rumor that he lives...
Dick Gere.
Yeah, he lives in my... there's a rumor that he apparently... Because he bought a Thanksgiving turkey in my hometown once. And so there's a rumor that he has like... there's this secret property that we've never been able to access. And I think it's just owned by some crazy person. That it's covered in barbed wire. But we always... when we drive by it, we're like, that's Dick Gere's house.
Yeah.
Dick Gere lives up there.
Dick Dent is a missed opportunity from the past. That would have been a great one. Dick Denton.
Oh, man.
Was he the Super Bowl MVP? I think he was, right?
Yeah.
Old Dick Dent.
I'm on Ranker's 95 people named Richard. Dick Gervais.
I'm Googling Rick NFL. Dick Sherman.
Dick Rubio.
Dick Seymour.
And then you would have to call Dick Clark Richard. Richard Clark.
Dick Seymour. I don't know why that's so
funny. Oh, dude, this one's. Oh, there's so many good ones. Yeah, Richard Lane. Dick Branson. Dick Petty. Dick Petty, the famous NASCAR driver, Dick Petty.
Dick Petty, I like that. That's a good one. Dick Petty. Dick Sherman.
Oh, man. Richard Ramirez was the Night Stalker, the famous serial killer, Dick Ramirez. Dick Simmons? Richard Simmons?
Dick Simmons.
Come on.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Dick Simmons.
Dick Simmons. All right. Yeah. We need to end this before we get ourselves in trouble.
Bob Gronkowski. Bob Griffin III.
Oh, no.
There you go.
Bobby Griffin. God bless.
Bobby G.
All right. That's Albert Breer.
I actually think that the last one, Tunyon, I think that is one where they call him Bob and he never, like the Packers players would call him Bob and he never asked to be called Bob.
That's good.
Back in the day. So Bobby Tunyon. Yeah.
Bobby Tunyon. All right. That's Al Breer. I'm Con Or. Doesn't work because
can't shorten your name.
The second half of my first name is just my last name, so it all just runs in together, so there's nothing very phonetically pleasing about it. But thank you guys for listening. If you're listening to this, we will be back probably like Tuesday. You know, we're gonna enjoy our Memorial Day weekend, we're gonna hang out, we're gonna cook some hot dogs, not together, but we'll talk about it on the podcast next week. Please enjoy your Memorial Day weekend and come back and join us in a little bit.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.